Welcome back once again, Parish of the Patriots, installment number 344. Time keeps rolling by and we keep on trucking at episode 344. I appreciate you tuning in. If you are new, first time tuning in, I hope you'll give the whole thing a shot. We do have a Christian specific segment that's roughly, very roughly, halfway point of the show. I hope you'll give it a shot. Maybe you think those things aren't your normal cup of tea, but you might get something out of it. There it is. You can do it. You cannot. That's up to you. I don't really care if you do get something out of the show, whether it's the first part, the second part. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. We have snail mail. That's what we got. The cryptocurrency addresses here on Radio Ogden have nothing to do with me. I just left those up there. Those are from Sven from many years ago, who we are counting down to him getting officially free. Looking forward to that. Believe me, nobody's looking forward to it more than me, except for Sven himself, obviously. So, yeah, if you do get something out of the show, I do got snail mail. Look on the description page for Radio, for Parish of the Patriots. I have the description of the show. It's right down there. Got the snail mail address. That's it. You'll be asking me what else you could do. That's it. And, yeah, it is always appreciated. No listener supporter mailbag once again this week. So we're going to skip right on past that. And we're going to keep on keeping on. Oh, we got several things we want to get into, and I actually have a topic that I think is interesting to me. So, of course, that's you get to listen to it, whether you find it interesting or not. But I'll get into that here in a minute. Another interesting thing, first, that I have observed, and I bet a lot of y'all have as well, so it's worth bringing up so you can sit here, we can all sit here together and kind of nod and wink at one another. You know, and I'm not here to go on once again about the Charlie Kirk thing. I know y'all are sick of it. I'm sick of it. Trust me. I'm sick of hearing about it. But that doesn't stop us from a few interesting observations. And no, it's not anything to do with, you know, the bullet, this, that. And I'm not talking about any of that. What I have found interesting about this is the open audition. Have y'all noticed, like, the open auditions? This is like watching open auditions. It's like, if you ever watched that, and I didn't, I'm proud to say. But you remember the old American Idol TV show, you know, and they would go around, and that Simon Cowell guy would be rude to people and think, you know, he was like the Gordon Ramsay of entertainment or whatever. But all these people would come in, they'd have open auditions, and all these people would show up and do their song and dance in front of the judges, hoping to get picked, that they might be the next American Idol. And it's funny to me to watch, because we're watching all of these people, basically, we're watching the same thing in real time. When it comes to the Charlie Kirk thing, he's off the scene now. And now you have all of these people who are doing their auditions to be the next one to take the ticket. I find that very telling. And the auditions are from different angles, you know. I'm not going to sit here and say this person, that person, because there's a lot. There's not one single person you say, yeah, that guy. There's all kinds of people. There's people questioning the narrative. But when you step back and look, they're auditioning. There's people coming at stuff from all kinds of angles. Then they're all auditioning. Let me take the ticket next. The devil never runs out of people wanting to take the ticket. He got people lined up. This is why you never take the ticket. I'm not getting preachy early, but I'm just telling you, because this has to do with real world stuff. You don't ever want to take the ticket because there's people lined up out there, you know? It's kind of like if you had a shitty job and your boss is bad to you, and he just looks at you and says, if you don't like it, you can hit the bricks, because I got 50 people, applications on my desk, people lined up wanting to take that job. Some of them probably for less money than you're making. So get you out there and get back to it wagey. All the people lined up. It's amazing to watch the open auditions of all these people lining up. They want to be the next big thing. They want to, they'll fill that slot and they'll do what they got to do, say what they got to say. They will step and fetch. Even I got people, you know, in my YouTube feed that I've never listened to before, never. Why didn't you? And they're in my YouTube feed, which is like the most normie of normie things. People that a short time ago were supposedly, you know, persona non gratas. And all of a sudden they're in my YouTube feed, like, check out this amazing podcast with this person. Why? Auditioning. Well, auditioning be the next big thing. To be the next American Idol. I'm glad it ain't me. I am. Y'all have no idea. Would you realize what all's involved in that? Count me out. Don't even ask. They ain't gonna ask. Don't worry, y'all. They ain't gonna ask me anyway. Praise the Lord. Oh, don't want any part of it. One big things in the news, and I get a kick out of these different things that are going on, conspiracy theories that aren't theories. They're based in things that we actually know. And one of those things is, you know, they're building these massive AI data centers. You know, they got one out here, I think, in Abilene, Texas. And these things are huge. They suck up an enormous amount of electricity. They use up water. I guess to cool the servers, because them things are just ginning, making all this heat. And they're building them all over the country, these massive data centers. And it's for the AI. And I mean, look, I have to admit, I'm one of those guys that back in the 90s, I'm like, this internet thing is way overhyped. I don't think it's going to be nearly as big as what they're saying. And in some aspects of that, by the way, I wasn't wrong. I was, but not completely. Because people were saying ridiculous shit about the internet, just like they're doing about AI now. Overhype. AI is going to be tricky. They're going to use it to fool you. They're already doing that. But, you know, some of these claims, you know, oh, AI is going to take everybody. I see these ridiculous figures. 80% of the jobs AI is going to take. If you fix cars for a living, don't worry about it. AI ain't going to come fix nobody's car. A lot of the made up jobs. If you're worried about, I said this before, but if you're worried about AI taking your job, you probably don't have a real job. You know, if you go out on a boat every day and catch shrimp, AI ain't going to be out there tossing no damn nets. But if you got some sort of make-believe, you know, people talking about, well, you know, the mistake of feminism and putting women in the workplace. Don't worry, because if anybody going to get replaced by AI, it's bitches. Women's made-up jobs, because 99% of women's jobs in the workplace are made-up jobs. Women could be out of the workplace eventually because they could be easily replaced by AI. If you're worried about AI taking your job, you ain't got no real job. That just means you could be replaced by an algorithm. Maybe Indians. Maybe Indians will get replaced by AI. It's not all negative, but it is overhyped. Back in the day, back in the 90s, you know, I was like, this internet thing, way overhyped. Now, it grew way beyond what any of us imagined back then. But you also have to remember, back then, there were ridiculous claims about what the internet was going to. The internet was going to replace everything, too. And it didn't. It does play a bigger role than what we could have imagined. But some of the claims back then were just nuts. And we saw this huge bubble with that, the dot-com bubble. And I mean, you know, I knew a lot less then, way a lot less then than I know now, which is normal as we grow older and gain experience. But I remember even back then, I was like, this is a bubble. This shit is being way overhyped. You want to talk about pumping and dumping. A lot of y'all young enough, it makes me feel even that much older. A lot of y'all young enough, you weren't even alive during that time. You weren't born yet. Man, you want to talk about pumping and dumping. I mean, you could start, you had just total, basically rando. Well, not really randos. Everybody's always connected. But you had people that, for all intents and purposes, appeared to be randos. And they could do a startup. And see, this would be such and such .com. And all they had to do. FingerUpYourAss.com is my new startup. And all of a sudden, billions of dollars are being thrown at them. No business plan. No way to demonstrate how they're ever going to turn an actual profit. It didn't matter. All that money got thrown into fingerupthe.com. And of course, then when 2000 come rolling around, there it went. See, all that money got to go somewhere. That's why they pump these people talking about these bubbles. Because all this money, all this debt they created is one of the ways they get rid of it. They pump up a bubble and they cash out and put money in their pocket, and then they get the rubes chasing after them. The norm of the little guys that think they can do it too. And they throw their money in and then they yank that rug. Other people heard about Bill Gates. He started Microsoft in his garage as a college dropout, and now look, he's like the world's richest guy. Ever think about that story? He just started Microsoft in his garage, and now look, he's one of the wealthiest people in the world. You believe that? No. All of these things, they just tell you these stories about these people. How do you know that's true? Oh, because that's what they've told you. And what is their track record for telling you the truth? Come on now. Anyway. Now it's AI. AI is the new dot-com bubble. Everything is AI. AI this, AI that, AI, AI, AI. So now they're building these massive data centers, which if you're unfortunate to have enough to have one in your area, it's going to suck up all the electricity and drive your bill up. So we know they're building these massive data centers. And what do they tell us? Well, this is going to be to power AI. You believe that shit? Like what? What are you doing with it? You know, making goofy videos that look real? Generating your AI porn? I mean, is this so important that the government needs to subsidize these outfits to build these massive data centers? They're going to use electricity that we can't provide. Suck up water in areas that water's already kind of scarce. You can... It's for the AI. That's the excuse. Now, most people that will point out that they don't believe this is just about AI will point to this as a part of their, you know, surveillance. They're going to have these data centers. The real role that these data centers are going to play is as part of this, like the Palantir thing, you know, the massive surveillance, which they're going to use AI for, to surveil and watch everything we do on the internet. Everything you put, all your views, they're going to have a full life, like a Minority Report. This AI talk, I've heard reference to Minority Report. I'm almost as sick of hearing about Minority Report as I am 1984. It's going to be like that. And I'm not saying, look, I'm not saying that's altogether incorrect. See, two things can be true at once, if that makes sense. Everything doesn't have to be an either or. Two things can be true at once, as long as they're not in opposition to each other. No one's saying all of these data centers, you know, why do we assume all of these data centers are going to be carrying out one singular function? They're going to do this massive survey. They're already doing the massive surveillance. They're just letting us know now, talking about, we're going to do this. What they're actually doing is backtracking, you know, like when dirty cops get busted, you know, planning, you know, getting illegal evidence, like maybe they illegally searched and found something. Well, they know they illegally searched. So then they create a story that, you know, they make a bunch of shit up to claim that then they found the evidence legally. They do that. It's like that. They do it. They've already been doing this, and it's time to roll it out and where the public phase of it. So they have to announce it as, we're going to do this. But they've been doing it all along. But you see, what I think people are missing, one of my personal theories, and it's a theory, I don't know. But I do think it's reasonable. I think I can explain why I think this is a reasonable theory when it comes to these data centers that I think a lot of people are missing. And again, they're talking about it, and nobody thinks about what has to go into that. So everybody's talking about, oh, these data centers are going to be for AI, which, whatever. Or, you know, they're going to be for the massive surveillance state. And again, remember, more than one thing can be true at the same time, as long as they're not running in opposition to one another. But I think one of the things people are missing is the infrastructure has to be, is the role of these central bank digital currencies, CBDCs. They're talking about it. They've been talking about it for years, which means they're further ahead on rolling this out. At some point, you're going to have a banking crisis. I do, because the economy, the way things are, the usury-based economy cannot go on indefinitely, just growing debt forever. We're already at the end stages because the government is the borrower of last resort. And at some point in time, they're just not going to be feasibly able to borrow more money, i.e. create more money. So at some point in time, the whole thing has to fall apart. And you're going to have massive disruptions, to say the least. They don't want you using cash. They are very... They're very much opposed to cash because they can't control that. That's why they've been training everybody for years to use their cards. We all do it. Well, some of y'all don't, but we all do it to a certain extent. We use our debit card, or people use their credit card or whatever. But they've been training people to this. Now in places like Korea and a lot of places in Asia, they're already using their phones to pay for everything. See, they're being trained. They're going to have to move things. They're going to have a transition. At some point in time, when things get really hairy, scary, people are going to suddenly want cash, and they're going to go to their banks, and they're going to close the banks. Guarantee it. It's happened before. It will happen again. They'll close the bank. You won't be able to go to the ATM. You won't be able to get no cash, and your debit card won't work. Or maybe they limit your debit card to, say, $40 a day. Man got to eat. Man got to buy gas. What are you going to do? They're going to have an alternative to roll out. And they've been talking for years about these CBDCs, central bank digital currencies. In other words, a digital currency. It's kind of like Bitcoin, except it's run by the government, which would just be great, right? That's why I say two things can be true at once, by the way, because this will have to go hand in hand with that surveillance state. Because we all know the digital currency, the reason people are against it, you look at the digital ID they're trying to push in the UK right now, because everybody knows you tie the two things together. You're criticizing Israel? Well, maybe you're just going to get some of your digital currency deleted, or maybe locked out of your digital currency account. It's bad enough now. They can lock you out of your bank account and people are in trouble. But if you've got some cash stashed back or something like that, then you know, you're not completely ruined. You can still go buy food. But you see, if they can do away with cash... And now you're beyond just locking people's bank accounts. You can cut them off from the only currency, which is the CBDC. Now, again, this isn't even conspiracy talk, because they themselves are talking about it. They've been talking about these central bank digital currencies for a long time. But what I do find funny is that people, and it's because for most people, most of y'all probably are familiar, but, you know, most people out there have no idea how cryptocurrencies work. You know, we've been forced to do cryptocurrencies. We used to do cryptocurrency back in the day. I quit a long time ago because the tax laws concerning what you have to file for Bitcoin and crap, it changes like Trump's trade policies. You can't keep up with it. Hell, your tax people can't keep up with it. You don't know what falls under what category, what falls under this category. It's just a headache. And I just decided it isn't worth messing with. I quit that a long time ago. Now, granted, I could probably, if not, I could have had a lot of money investing, quote unquote, in Bitcoin. But that's a topic for another time. That doesn't have anything to do with what we're saying now. Most people out there have no idea how cryptocurrencies work. They hear these people come out, Lagarde or whoever, and talking about, you know, you need this central bank digital currencies. It's the way of the future. And people just think that the government's just going to enter a, you know, create a digital dollar. And no idea how that works. And I thought we'd get into the discussion of how it works. And again, for most of y'all, you probably already know this. And I'm sorry, but you have to realize there are people listening that don't know. how Bitcoin really works. They know what it is, but they don't really understand the mechanics of it. And I want to get into that a little bit, and it won't be boring. You know, I'm going to skim through it as fast as I can for those of you who are already kind of familiar, while touching on enough points to where those who aren't at least can get to why these data centers are connected to the digital bank currencies. And I think that's something a lot of people are missing. Now, as you know, Bitcoin has been around a long time now. I remember when Bitcoin was like $200, $230 a piece for Bitcoin. And when it went up to 1,000, everybody went crazy. Oh my gosh. Now, what is it? It's like $100,000. I don't even know. It's like I said, I've done it. I might get discouraged if I look. So you might ask yourself, if you're not familiar with how these things are, why hasn't Bitcoin gone into competition with the dollar? Why has Bitcoin, what has kept Bitcoin? They talk about these central bank digital currencies, which raises the question, why would anyone use these CBDCs when we already have Bitcoin? That doesn't make any sense, does it? Why would you use the new latest central bank government issued digital currency when you can just use Bitcoin? It's been around for years, right? Well, here's the answer. And basically, the answer comes down to mining, what they call Bitcoin mining. Now, if you don't know about cryptocurrencies, when you hear Bitcoin mining, you probably picture, I don't know, maybe people don't know, when they hear about mining Bitcoin, they picture like somewhere there's like, Minecraft, you know, like these Minecraft people are out here and they're mining Bitcoin. Blip, 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 blip. You created one Bitcoin. Generally speaking, that's not what we're talking about when you hear the term Bitcoin mining. What you're talking about, mining fees. When you hear Bitcoin mining fees, not because they're out there digging up Bitcoin. And this is why Bitcoin has never is not a competition to, you know, to the dollar. Bitcoin. Now, people point to, you know, because the price is so unstable. And yeah, that does play into it. That's not irrelevant, but I don't believe that's the key reason. The reason Bitcoin, and this is going to be relevant, stay with me. The reason Bitcoin's never gotten into competition with the dollar is because it takes a long ass time for a transaction to go through. We're all trained. If you use cash, if you use your debit card, if you use your credit card, you go to the grocery store, you buy your loaf of bread and whatever the hell is your basket of groceries. You go to the home improvement store, get you some wood, whatever. You stick your card in there, pull it out. It spritz out a receipt. You go home. If you check your bank account, as soon as you get home, you'll see $22.38 is being deducted from your account. Now, it may take a day or so before they finalize the card transaction, but it's already dinged on your account. You're all familiar with that. In other words, for the most part, it's instant. Whether you use cash or whether you use your debit card or your credit card, it's more or less instant. Bitcoin is anything but instant. Back when I messed with Bitcoin, there'd be like, I've seen it take well over a day for a transaction to go through, depending on what you set your mining fees to. You see, the mining fees, think of it more like processing fees. If you send Bitcoin to another person, if you were to spend it, for instance, if you sent it to another person, you'll go check at the end of the day and it's still sitting there in your wallet. If you have the mining fee set low because you're trying not to, you know, because you're giving up a certain percentage of it, you see. It's like your credit card or debit card transfer, you know, you use it in that card machine. They charge in like 2-3% depending on you know, the bank that's doing it, that the business is using. But they're taking a cut. Now, a lot of places are starting to tack that on because they're tired of eating it, while other places just eat the 3% because they figure they're getting more business. So they're trading volume for that little bit of percentage of profit they're losing and giving away to the bank. But it is there. Mining fees can be way higher than that. They take a percentage. You sent $100 worth of Bitcoin to Jane Doe over here. She's not going to get $100. She's going to get $95 or whatever. Maybe $90, depending. Now, you can set the mining fees higher where they take a bigger percentage and it will go faster. But the person's going to get less. Now, if you're paying someone $100 for their services, You know, they're going to want $100. They are going to want $90. That wasn't what they agreed on. And again, this whole process takes a long time. Hours at best, sometimes days. This is why Bitcoin's never been really, they would be talking about, oh, they don't want Bitcoin competing with the dollar. It's never going to compete with the dollar because you have to have transactions that are completed basically right there. You want to be paid. You want to make sure you're getting your money. If you have to wait days for the, what, are you going to go buy your wood at the home improvement store and they're going to put it back behind the counter like the old layaway program back in the day? If you were a kid, you're my age, you used to go down to the Ben Franklin store and you seen a skateboard you wanted, but you didn't have quite enough money, but you could take it up there to the counter and put that bad boy on layaway. You fill out this paper and give them a little money and they would put your skateboard in the back. And you mow some lawn, next week you come and give them a little more money. They still got the skateboard. You had it on layaway. You're going to be layawaying your wood at the home improvement store because they got to wait for the Bitcoin transaction to go through. No, ain't no one going to do that shit. It's got to be instant. Now, it's this way because, now this is the part where it's, will hopefully get less boring and maybe for some people, the light will go off. The reason, again, if you don't know how that works, it's not just processing fees like with your credit card. So what makes Bitcoin unique is it can't be faked. It's on the blockchain. And what that means is because you're not sending a whole Bitcoin. Like I say, I think right now it's like $100,000 or some shit. You ain't sending them a whole Bitcoin. You're sending a piece of Bitcoin. $20, $100, $200 worth of Bitcoin. What the mining, the processing is they have to, it traces everywhere that's been. That's one of the things they like about the idea of cryptocurrency, by the way, why they're talking about these CBDCs. But anyway, it has to trace that code, the unique code, the long string of code. Think of it as a serial number. And its whole history has to be traced back, which takes a lot of computing power. But the whole point of that is you can't counterfeit it. It's impossible. If somebody could have counterfeited Bitcoin, they would have already. You can't because of this process. And this is why there's mining fees, because it takes a lot of computing power to trace the life of this Bitcoin, which could be 20-something years old, its whole existence back, to make sure that it's not counterfeit. And this brings us to the CBDCs. It's got to be instant. They can't enact a CBDC and have it work like Bitcoin, where, like I say, you can't buy something because they got to wait a day or two or three for the transaction to go through. It's got to be instant. Like, that's what people are trained for with their cards and stuff. So it's got to be instant. At the same time, it is going to have to be traceable like Bitcoin so that it can be counterfeited. Because you know some Indian going to find some, sir, I have new Bitcoins for you. They're going to have a way to where it can't be counterfeited, which means they're going to be a blockchain setup, something similar to Bitcoin, probably not identical because I don't think it's doable, but it's going to have to be reasonably close to the security of Bitcoin. Otherwise, somebody's going to find a way to counterfeit it. This means it's going to take what? It's got to be instant. It can't be like Bitcoin where it takes days, but at the same time, it is going to have to be like Bitcoin in that it's got to be traceable to where people can't counterfeit it, where they have complete control over it, where somebody can't just make India coins and just make up some code and say, I have 1 kajillion CBDCs in my account now because I created this code. It's got to be verifiable so it can't be counterfeited. We put all of this together, and what are they going to have? If it has to be basically instantaneous, like your credit card, but it has to also be counterfeit proof and traceable like Bitcoin, which already uses a massive amount of computing power to trace and verify, you put those things, two things together, and what's it going to take? A massive amount of computing power. They're going to have the infrastructure for that. And they're building it right in front of us. Talking about it's for AI. Because they know if they come out and say, we're building these massive centers and all these servers we're bringing in on semi-trucks that are going to eat all this electricity and use up all the water, and you're going to be out there trying to collect horse piss in a can to drink. We're doing all this for the central bank digital currency. People throw a fit. So they say it's for AI. You're going to be able to make cute fake panda videos. And yeah. I like panda videos. What about you? I think these AI, these data centers, the thing that no one I see is talking about, this is going to be to, they're going to have the infrastructure to process these central bank digital currencies. It's going to take a massive amount to trace it and have it be more or less instantaneous. They're going to have, this is going to take a ginormous amount of computing power to quote unquote mine it like Bitcoin. Again, it can't be like Bitcoin level because it would just be impossible. But it's going to have to be close enough where people can't counterfeit it. But yet, they're going to have to relax it enough where it is at least within the realm of possibility to burn enough energy to process. In other words, I think these centers are a lot more to do with central bank digital currency than it is with AI. And again, I'm not saying that these data centers also don't have to do, because I think the two, the CBDCs and this basically AI-powered surveillance grid, you know, they're very interrelated. If you're on the internet doing bad posts, bad thoughts, criticizing Israel, whatever, you know, they have the ultimate way to smack you down. You think getting your bank account shut down is bad? Wait till you are dependent on CBDCs and they can lock you out of it. Slap your hand. Anyway, I think that's an interesting angle, and I haven't really heard anybody point it out, and it's right here in front of us. When you understand, because that's why I think I say most people don't even understand how cryptocurrency works and the massive amount of computing power required. When they talk about CBDCs, you're like, well, it's got to have to be instant, and it's going to have to be counterfeit proof. And the only way that's going to happen is it's going to take an ungodly amount of computing power to run these things and to trace them to make sure they're not counterfeited and to make it happen quickly. And to enact that, you're going to have, you can't just say we're issuing it and then build the data centers later. The servers, put the servers in later. How's that going to work? Got to have that infrastructure right in place. And they're building the CBDC infrastructure right in front of us. And people talking about, oh no, so we'll be able to use AI to make fake cute panda videos. What we ain't faking is the Christian specific segment. We're going to run long today, I can tell already. So without further ado, you know, to get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. The book of Mark, chapter 12, verses 28 through 31 reads, "And one of the scribes came, and having heard them reasoning together and perceiving that he had answered them well, asked him, which is the first commandment of all? Jesus answered him, the first of all the commandments is, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment. And the second is like, namely this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. There is none other commandment greater than these." I don't know how many of y'all saw. Did y'all see any of the clips? I'm sure you have. You saw some of the clips from the quote-unquote Charlie Kirk memorial thing they did, you know, in the stadium with the flares going off, and it basically looked like either a wrestling event or a camp, you know, a political party convention or something. But one of the things, if you looked at those clips, it was kind of striking for me, is there was these hundreds of thousands, supposedly, I don't know, over 200,000 people or something crammed in here. And all of these people, you know, tears in their eyes and their hands in the air and wailing and whatnot. And of course, the two names that got mentioned, aside from Charlie Kirk, the two names that got mentioned the most were Jesus Christ and Donald Trump. And watching the folks with their hands in the air, in this state of emotionalism. See, the problem with being in a state of emotionalism is you set yourself up to be manipulated. If you are in a hyper emotional state. And this covers across the board. This is one of the reasons why the Bible warns about being slow to anger, because anger is a form of, you know, hyper emotionalism. If you fly off the handle and you're in a hyper emotional state, you're not reasoning. You're liable to do things that you're going to regret later. You know, a great example is people that get so hyper-focused on driving and they do this road rage, and the next thing they know, they wake up the next day in jail when they're not mad anymore, facing prison time because of a road rage incident over something silly, over some petty thing. You're not reasoning well. How many times have you got mad or in the heat of an argument with your spouse or a family member have said things that after you cooled off, you thought, I wish I hadn't said that, because of course, once the words come out, you can't do anything about it. Being in a hyper-emotionalistic state, and you had hundreds of thousands of people out here in a hyper-emotional state, prime for manipulation. I don't think it's by accident, by the way, that this scene was set up rather than a somber occasion where people can stop and reflect. Isn't it interesting as well, as much talk of Jesus Christ has came up in all of this? You know, the Bible, it says foolishness is found in the house of laughter. Wisdom is found in the house of mourning. If you go to a place and people are mourning a death, wisdom is found there because it forces you to reflect on your own mortality. And it yanks you out of your routine and gives you occasion to reflect and consider your own actions and how close you too may be to the grave. And yet you take something here, which was supposed to be a memorial service for someone who's dead, and instead of it being a house of mourning where people might find wisdom and reflect, you have this hyper-emotionalism, and they turned it into this quote-unquote celebration. And of course, also, not coincidentally either, a fundraising event. Now, these hundreds of thousands of people in the audience, they mean well. You know, I mean, people mean well. But whenever people are encouraging you to be in a state of hyper-emotionalism, this isn't good. Well, this got me coming around then to thinking about the passage that we just read out of the Bible. Now, we've read that passage before, usually in the context of what does it mean to love your neighbor? And, you know, this is something people struggle with, and along with turn the other cheek and loving your enemies and such, and people don't define love. But I thought about it, and I thought, you know, how often have we gotten into the discussion of what is the other part? What does that mean to love the Lord your God? All your heart, all your mind, all your soul. What does this mean? What does that? Because it's not empty emotionalism. When I see these people, I kept thinking of that, and I don't even remember the song, you know, but like the hip-hop songs back in the day, you know, put your hands in the air and wave them like you just don't care, and you got all these people talking, you know, and somebody throws up Jesus Christ, and they got their hands in the air, and they're wailing and hollering and whooping it up. Is this a form of loving the Lord with all your soul, all your might, all your mind? Now understand, if you partake in this form of spirituality towards the Lord, I'm not attacking, I'm not downing you, and I will confess that many years ago, I too was a partaker at times in this sort of behavior. Not anymore. I like to believe I've spiritually matured a bit over the years, but I thought we would talk about this. What does it mean to love the Lord as Jesus instructed you? Because as we know, love is not, what do we know love is not? Which we've talked about multiple times. It's not an empty emotional feeling of affection. As I've said so many times before, love is one of those words, you know, they're constantly redefining what words mean in this society. And love is one of the most tortured words, to the point that people don't even know what it means. I think it's curious that Jesus said in those times, warned in those end times, they won't even know how to love anymore. Well, how can anyone know how to love anymore? Because they've changed the definition so many times. Most people will jump to the definition of a feeling of affection. You know, an emotional feeling of affection. And this is why people have such a stumbling block with this when it comes to, quote unquote, love your enemies. They think they're supposed to go around and lie and front that they're having some emotional affection towards some guy that's a real asshole that they don't like. And of course, as we've covered many times, you know, that's not what it means. So if we know love, like faith, is a thing about action, it's about what you do. It's reflected in your behavior. That is how you love. It's reflected in your behavior. It has nothing to do with the way you feel about somebody. It is not anything to do with empty emotionalism. Well, if love is not empty emotionalism when it comes to your enemies, your neighbors, your family, yourself, then why should we assign empty emotionalism to loving the Lord with all our soul, all our mind, all our strength? And yet when you see these people with their hands in the air and they're screaming and they're mumbling because they just can't get the words out, there's such a spiritual fervor, loving the Lord so much. Is this not just a form of this emotionalism on steroids? And again, please understand, if you do this, I'm not attacking you. I'm not, you know, again, many years ago, I did the same thing. I had this, I believe, incorrect view of these things. And I just thinking how much I love the Lord. I understand people think how much they love the Lord. They love him so much, they can't even get the words out. All they can do is just sit there and clench their teeth and clench their fists and put their hands in the air and just wallow in how much they love Jesus. But that's emotionalism. And here's the big problem with that. There's nothing concrete about that. You can do that. You can grind the enamel off your teeth doing that. And if you go home and go right back to not living the way you're supposed to, not taking the actions you're supposed to, you haven't accomplished anything. Another big problem that arises from this is the fact that anytime emotionalism is involved, you can be manipulated one way or the other. In other words, if being in this hyper-emotional, feeling so much joy about Jesus, if that's your definition of loving the Lord, then what happens when that wears off? What happens if your emotions happen to get swung the other direction and now you're in a funk, you're in a depression, you can't see the forest for all the trees of problems around you? It's easy to feel like the Lord has abandoned you. The Lord has left you. Your faith has failed you. This is the problem with emotionalism, is it's always going to be a two-edged sword. You might feel spiritually great with your hands in the air and a hollering and a waving, grinding your teeth. But the double-edged sword of that is, if your emotions happen to get manipulated and flip the other direction, then your faith falls apart. Now we're going to talk about this. Let's flip it the other direction. Reference verses from the Bible. We're all familiar. God so loved man, so loved the world, that he sent his only begotten son. You see, you're given a direct connection between what God's love is. How would you feel if God loved the world so much that, you know, he gave you a hand wave and said, good luck? That doesn't help much. The action is tied directly. This backs up love being action, by the way. God loved the world so much, he loved man so much, that he sent his only begotten son. You see, it's tied directly. He loved, so he sent. That's the love. Is he sent? If he didn't send his son, then his love is meaningless. Far be that from being the case. But I'm saying, you know, if there was no action attached to it, then how would God be any different from these silly idols that people have? No, he so loved the world that he sent his only begotten son. See, the action tells you that's the love. It's not just a demonstration. It is the love. Love is a verb. It is action. It is things taken. It is something you do. And the problem is, if you're hung up with this definition of love being empty emotionalism, and you go to your very evangelical or whatever church on Sundays and spend 30 minutes with your hands in the air waving them around like you don't care, and hollering and mumbling to yourself because you're so whipped up emotionally that you can't, that's not action. I mean, it's not. It's just you trying to feel good about something. And misconstruing that as a connection with the Lord. Again, many years ago, been there, done that. And looking back now, I could see, you know, how basically how silly that was. It's, how do I want to put this? I hate to use myself as an example because it sounds like I'm just talking about me, like, you know, oh, I done this, I need to do this. But as you get older, you look back and you can trace your spiritual path. And this is how it's supposed to be for everybody. Now, if you're in your 20s, you ain't got much to look back on, so don't get discouraged. You're building that path now. If you're a believer and you're, say, 25 years old, look, you ain't got much to look back on. Don't get down. That doesn't mean you're failing or you're doing something wrong. Now, if you're pushing 60 years old, which sadly I'm getting closer to every day, and you look back and you can't trace your spiritual growth, then you've been doing something wrong. But if you're 25 years old, you ain't got enough perspective to look back. So again, don't let that discourage you. But when you get older and you can look back and you look at these things, I can look back many years ago when I would partake in putting my hands in the air and, oh, Jesus, I love you so much and everything. And I meant well. But I look back on that and compare it to now. You know, love of the Lord now. You know, we do these discussions here. You know, it's a motivation of my love of the Lord because you don't hide your lamp under a bushel. If I think, you know, I have some understanding in this or whatnot, I share it with y'all. You can take it, you can leave it. It y'all are free to do what you want to do with it. But if I felt like I had something, you know, a viewpoint or perspective that maybe somebody could do something with and it might give them a little boost and grant some clarity, and I didn't share that, that would be a failure on my part. Does that make sense? Again, I'm loath to talk about myself here, but it's easiest to give an example of that. I can look back at those times, you know, when I'd be one of these people in the crowd with hands in the air because she mentioned Jesus right before she mentioned Donald Trump while making her speech up there. And, oh, yes, Jesus, you know, and whipped up in this emotional state. So I look at that then, and I compare it now. And, you know, I talk about seeking the Lord daily, and I advise people to try, if at all possible, to seek the Lord daily. If you can't, at least try to set some time aside once a week to seek out the Lord. You know. And for me personally, when I'm most of my time, quote unquote, you know, seeking God and wisdom and understanding, you know, even prayer, I spend most of that time with my mouth shut as far as talking to the Lord or in prayer, and more time trying to listen, try to understand, try to open my heart to wisdom and understanding. And that transition from where you were back then to where you are now is how you love the Lord. In other words, you're making that journey. We talked about this in, I believe, the last show. We talk about it all the time. You know, making that journey, how Jesus gave you the opportunity to start on that journey now without looking back over your shoulder, worrying about what you've done. You can go ahead and make the journey God intended when he created the first man to today. You can make that journey. And that is how you love the Lord. You are taking action. Anybody, you can sit there and wail all you want to with your hands in the air and talk about how you love the Lord. But if you aren't making the journey, if you aren't taking the steps to know him, the steps to grow, then your love is meaningless. Again, just like if the Bible read that God so loved the world that he waved at everybody and said, bless you, hope things go well for you. No, he loved the world. He loved man. He sent his only begotten son. There's the love. It's the action. Now, if we're going to spiritually grow, you know, what does it mean? You know, how do you get from spiritual, shall we say, relative spiritual immaturity? Because we're always going to be, like I said, we're always going to be growing. This is an ongoing process. Nobody should ever present themselves. I certainly don't. As you know, I've got this figured out. I am at a point of high spiritual maturity. We're all spiritually immature. We're all trying to grow. It's just kind of on a scale. You know, and how do you grow? How do you go through this process? This is a little tricky because you can't spiritually grow For starters, let me back it up. You can't spiritually grow if you're in an emotional state because you're not thinking. When you looked at those people in the Charlie Kirk memorial crowd and they all waving their hands in the air and their eyes clenching and because they mentioned Jesus right after Donald Trump and Saint, now practically Saint Charlie Kirk, do you think any of those people were thinking logically? How many of those people do you think were reasoning and thinking unto themselves? In other words, if you're hyped up into an emotional state, you can't think. You can't reason. You can't grow. Those people are not in a position to spiritually grow because they're just whipped up in an emotional state. How many of those people were, while clenching their teeth and praising Jesus with all good intentions, how many of them were stopped, in their mind were going, but why are they raising donations? Why are they, these people rich and they want more millions of dollars. They want us to throw in some more money. It's like they went to bought a ticket for a concert. How much is this as entertainment? And they're raising more money, more fundraising. You can't spiritually grow if you're hyped up emotionally. You've got to shut up. You've got to be able to seek out wisdom and understanding and prudence. Read the first several chapters or so of the book of Proverbs. The emphasis placed on wisdom, understanding. You can't gain wisdom, understanding, knowledge, which is directly related to this path in the Lord, if you're whipped up in an emotional state because you're not reasoning at all. You're just whipped up emotionally, and then in the middle of it, they like, go ahead and be sure and donate. Here's our, scan this QR code or whatever the hell. And nobody stops and questions it, and they know this because you're all whipped up in an emotional state. How can you grow? Here's another problem. How can you grow spiritually if you can't question? You've got to be able to question. I remember many times growing up and attending church, and you would often hear people tell everybody that you don't question God. That's a sin. Don't question the Lord. You never question the Lord because that's lack of faith, and you're committing a sin if you question the Lord, if you question God. But how are you going to ever grow spiritually or otherwise? How are you ever going to grow if you don't question? You've got to, if you're going to gain wisdom, knowledge, and understanding, as we're heavily advised to do, illustrating a key element of this journey of spiritual growth. But how are you ever going to do that if you don't question anything? If you just take things at face value, shrug it off, because you wouldn't dare want to question anything in the Bible. You wouldn't want to question God. There's a difference, by the way, between questioning and accusing. If you decide in your heart that God doesn't know what he's doing and you have that attitude, well, then yes, now you've fallen into sin. I'm talking about questioning. I'm talking about looking at something. You read something in your Bible. We just read, love the Lord with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind. And you say to yourself, I don't understand this. What does this even mean? What am I supposed to go around and remind myself over and over how much I love God? What does this mean? I don't even know what this means. I've always think that whole thing about don't question, don't you dare question. I've often viewed that as like a cop-out for preachers that don't know either. I really do. I think if you ever talk to a preacher or a teacher, religious, somebody who's a religious authority, and they give you the answer along the lines of don't question it. Everything will be known when you're in the kingdom of God. This is from God. And just don't question it. Otherwise, you're sin and you're sinning and you're demonstrating a lack of faith. I always see that as a cop-out because they don't know either. That's the truth. They don't know. I've come to the realization I'm getting a little off track. One of the things I've really come to the realization on this spiritual journey is how many preachers and teachers and supposed religious authorities don't have a freaking clue. They don't. And I find this amazing, and yet I shouldn't, because the Bible is full of examples where God doesn't use those people. He gets some, you know, Jesus' disciples. They were fishermen and stuff, you know? I mean, you know, just regular dudes. You know, he just picks some rando and say, hey, you need to go tell these people this, that, or the other. But I look at how people go and they go to these schools, you know, to get a certificate, and now they get a license issued by the government, and that's something telling all in itself, but we'll just go on past that. And now they're allowed. They're officially certified. You can go be a preacher now. You can go apply for a job as a preacher and show them that you've got your degree from preacher school. Preacher school. But that doesn't mean you know. In other words, I've also come to realize, as many of you probably have, that all the education system in this country, you know, from the time you're in kindergarten all the way, if you go to college and get you a degree, all the way through college, and no matter what you get a degree in, the education system in this country is just about memorization skills. That's all it is. You sit in a class, they instruct you what to think, and you memorize it. And the better you can memorize it and repeat it back on a test, the better you quote-unquote know. And the one thing you're not encouraged to do is what? Ask any questions. Don't question it. These people know what they're talking about. I remember many years ago, and I don't even remember the context of it, if I was reading it or if it was demonstrated or video, I don't remember. But I remember there was this guy, and I was so blunt. I was a child at the time, and there was this guy, and like you could throw anything out at him. In other words, this guy knew every line of the Bible. You know, you could look at the guy and say, Deuteronomy chapter 9, verse 7. And he could sit there for a second and read it off to you. You go check, and that's it. And everybody was blown. I was a kid. I was blown away by this, too, because the Bible is such a daunting book. And this guy could do this, and I was blown away by this. Now, as I'm older, I look back and realize, well, that doesn't mean he understands a damn bit of it. All that means is that guy had a very unique ability to memorize. That's all. It's impressive in its own right, but because this guy could repeat back what any verse you pull out of the Bible says by memory, all that tells you is that guy has an incredible ability to memorize things. It doesn't mean he understands a damn thing he's parroting back at you. He could probably do the same thing with an encyclopedia, and it wouldn't have any more meaning. It doesn't mean he understands any of these things. It just means he's got good memorization skills. And I think you run into this in other fields because this is how the education system is set up in this country. You will run into this when you deal with doctors. They don't know the answers. They don't figure out what's wrong with you. They look, it's basically a checklist they run through, and they memorize that, okay, if this happens, then you do this, this, and this. If they do, they will do things. I have seen doctors do things. I'm kind of maybe getting a little off topic here, but I have seen doctors prescribe and do things that make absolutely no sense. None. But that's because that's what the procedure says. That's what they were taught. In other words, that's what they've memorized. And even though you can point out to them, this doesn't make any sense. Why are you prescribing this course of action? And they will tell you, because that's what we do. If this happens, we put you on these two prescriptions. We put you on these three prescriptions. And you're like, yeah, but those don't have anything to do with my personal actual circumstances of why I had this happen. But that's what we do. It is just like you run into just like an error code with these people. This is what we do. If this happens, we do this. It's because all it is memorization. And it applies, I think, a lot to these preachers. They just memorize. And if you have a question and they can't come up with an answer, they can't reason through, they can't, you know, go pray on it, or heaven forbid, just look at you and say, man, I don't know. Trust me, if you threw enough questions at me from the Bible or whatever, I can guarantee you're going to run into one that I would just have to basically say, man, I don't know. Because we're all always learning. And the standard answer, I think they treat them this, is, you know, well, we can't know everything now, but we will know when we're in glory. As if that's an excuse not to seek the answer. You know? You go to a preacher and you say, man, I've got this part of the Bible. I've read this. I don't understand it. And he don't know either. But he don't want to tell you he don't know. So what does he do? They'll fall back on this stock and say, I don't know, brother. But look, you some things you're not going to understand. But we're going to know when we're in his glory. You know, like, don't worry about it. Don't try to find the answer. We'll know someday. You can't know if you can't question. You've got a question. You should have questions. You should have some spiritual, intellectual curiosity. What is God doing? Why has he done this? Why has he set up this whole elaborate time system for us to come into and go through this at times rigorous process, full of temptation and full of stumbling blocks, to see what we spend the time on? He gives us this time to invest and he sees what we do with it. Why is he doing all of this? Why are we here? It's a question every man ultimately winds up with. Why am I here? What's my purpose? What am I doing? Got to be able to question. Don't let anybody tell you it's a sin to question God. You got to question. Get a question, seek wisdom, seek understanding. You're not going to do that in a whipped up emotional state, wallowing on the floor, or whatever the hell else. Get your mind quiet. Get some quiet time. Seek God, praise God. Try to gain spiritual understanding. Try to. This is going through this is how you reciprocate. God so loved the world, he sent his only begotten son. Now, what are you going to do? Is God's love one-sided? Are you a Christian believer, but like God has made this massive, beyond comprehension act of love in your direction, and you're not going to reciprocate it back because it's too much trouble? What are you going to do? If God so loved the world, they sent his only begotten son. Okay, well, now you're on the receiving end of that. Now, what are you going to do in response to that? Spend 30 minutes a day hollering about how much you love him without doing anything and go on about your life? Shrugging your shoulders and say, it'd be a sin to question anything about God. How can you not? We're trying to figure this out. This is why we're here. This is why he sent his only begotten son, so we can start trying to figure this out and grow, mature, be ready. It's a personal journey for you to take. You're responsible for your spiritual growth. It's fine to consult with your preacher, but if you don't get a satisfactory answer, I do my best to share any insights I believe I have that might help you. But if you know, that doesn't make me responsible for your spiritual growth. I'm just sharing some information that I hope will help you, some viewpoints that I hope might, you know, answer a question. I don't have all the answers. You got to grow, you got to spiritual, and you're responsible for that. You have to reciprocate God's love by taking the action of putting it in. And I'm going to tell you, there is a reward, and I'm not speaking only of the kingdom of God. Oh, obviously, that's where we're placing our treasure. That's where we're investing all of this action. We know we're not investing it for monetary payoff in this world. We're investing it for the time to come. But there is also a payoff in this world as well. As I said earlier, when you get older and you can stop and look back and realize that you have come along, that you have made progress. You can look back on your spiritually immature self and look at yourself now and say, wow, I've really gained some understanding. I've grown closer to knowing about God, which is growing closer to God himself. I've made progress. But you have to look back many years, decades even sometimes, to see how far you've come. But it is rewarding. What I'm saying is, it is definitely rewarding because you know then, look, if you were chasing a non-existent thing, a ghost, a phantom, there wouldn't be any progress. When you can look back and say, wow, I've really, you know, I understand things a lot better than I did 30 years ago. That is rewarding. It's also comforting because you realize when you look back on your life, because when you're young, it's a whole different thing you're going through than when you get older. Because when you're young, you're really, the decisions you're making are setting the path for the time ahead of you, for your life ahead of you, if that makes sense. You're struggling, the devil is wanting to pull you one direction, your spiritual nature, you're trying to go maybe in that, and you're trying to kind of, a lot of what you're doing, you're trying to decide what kind of life you're going to live as a young person. You're trying to decide, what's my life going to mean? And when you get older, and then you can look back and you realize, really, that's past you now. Look, you've already lived your life. It was a struggle, but you've spent your life more or less seeking the Lord, doing your best. You know, yes, there was a time you were basically the spiritual newbie, kind of a dumbass and didn't know, but you were trying. Praise God for his patience. And you're going to look back and like, you're not making the decision anymore, in other words, because you've already decided. And a testimony of your decision is the years, the decades even, that you have put in. And you can look back and say, I'm at least not like the young people. I'm not having to struggle with how am I going to live my life. Because you know, we'll get caught in that and we act like we still are. But you've already made that. You can look back and say, look, I've already dedicated all of these decades, you know, as a whole, to serving God, to the spiritual, to seeking the Lord, to loving the Lord with all my heart, all my soul, all my mind. I put this work in. That is my reciprocation of the love. And you can look back on that and say, that's rewarding. I'm no longer struggling to, like a young man who's trying to decide what path his life's going to take. My life has already taken that path. You know, I have put in the work. It's there. It can't be taken away because that's already happened. It's in the past. And as a whole, I spent my life. You can say you've spent your life seeking the Lord. And I'm telling you, particularly if you're a young man and in that trying to figure out what direction your life, look, there's payoff in this life too, where you can look back and you'll be glad. Trust me, those things that are tempting for you as a young man, if the more you can turn away from those things and try to live your life as best you can as a whole towards seeking God, when you're older, you will look back. You won't regret it. You won't look back and go, man, I wish I would have just wallowed in sin instead. That would have been, I would have had a lot more fun. You look back and you say, thank goodness I didn't do that. That would have been a waste of time. Had some other stuff I thought we'd get into, but I'm not going to get into it. We're not going to have time today, but maybe we'll get into it next week. I don't know. We always get into something next week. God so loved the world, he sent his only begotten son. You're all familiar with that. Now, what are you going to do? You've got to reciprocate it. God sent his son. That's what he did. That was his love. Now, what do you do in return? And what you do in return is a measure of how you love the Lord with all your mind, all your soul, all your might. As Jesus instructed us, it's an action. Like everything else, it is an action. It is what you do. It's a lot of work. It is. It's, you're talking about dedicating yourself to a lifetime of work. And people will hear about somebody, and he dedicated his life. You know, that woman, that Jane Goodall or whatever, the monkey lady, you know, and she died recently, and everybody was going on about she dedicated her life to these monkeys or, you know, naturism or whatever the hell it was. I don't care. And Jane Goodall, whatever. Anyway. And people look at somebody like that, and they honor them. Say, wow, what dedication. Dedicate your life to these monkeys. That's something to honor. Like it's a unique thing. As believers, that's what we're supposed to be doing, dedicating our lives to learning and understanding God. That we're supposed to be more dedicated than the monkey lady. We're dedicated. You're supposed to have that dedication. You're going to get a whole lot more of it than dedicating your life to the monkeys. Anyway, yes. We should all, that's our whole purpose. We're dedicating our lives to gaining wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. And we're going to wrap it up on that note. I hope you got something out of the show, especially the Christian-specific segment. That is always my favorite part. And I hope you did, I hope you get something out of all of it. Dr. Johnson will be back tomorrow with the Orthodox Nationalist. As always, he wraps up our week on Thursdays with his installment of the Daily Nationalist. We are really counting down the days to Sven's official freedom. I'm looking forward to it. I know all of you are as well. We're just waiting with bated breath. and we can look at that a little bit more at that time. Looking forward to that as well. So anyway, I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. I appreciate you joining me this week. And I hope that you'll come back next week for the Parish of the Patriots.